Let me get this out of the way. This is the 16th episode of the Femme Fatale podcast, and welcome to it. I take your questions about how entertainment really works, behind the scenes, yada, yada. I don't know if I'm going to be able to retain my usual standard of level-headed professionalism in this next episode. Just, like, sitting here knowing what I've got for you. I am in danger of dissolving into a boneless, jelly-like mass at any second without warning, suddenly unable to do much more than gibber and clap my paws like a performing seal. I have an interview with a crown jewel of a source. Someone I have admired for years and years, someone whose knowledge I've coveted highly. If you listen to audiobooks, and really, if you don't listen to audiobooks, why? They're the way you read books when someone else, someone else moves his lips for you so you don't have to. Anyway, if you listen to audiobooks on the regular, this is definitely the podcast for you. And if you don't, but you're curious as to the hidden secrets of the audiobook fairy world, like how much readers get paid or perhaps do not get paid, how long it takes to read a book, how audiobook readers, narrators are treated during the Audie Awards, hint, the answer is really ghetto. You are in for an unmitigated treat, my friend. And if you regularly listen to audiobooks, by the way, words like unmitigated, you learn words like that without even actively like thinking. Anyway, I have an interview with pretty much the Dave Grohl of audiobooks. You're not going to want to miss this. I also have Lisa B. Jenkins.
Oh, hey. Oh. I don't listen to audiobooks.
Well, then you have to learn your words the old-fashioned way, and that's just sad. I'm sad for you, Lisa.
I learn them by skimming over them and forgetting them immediately.
I'm only mildly ashamed. Anyway, you're also a font of information about the dirty, dirty music industry, which is the other reason why I have you here. And you are the co-host, of course, of the fabulous Nerd Out podcast.
I am.
If you like anime, if you like video games, if you like sci-fi, if you like fantasy, you're going to want to listen to Lisa B's Nerd Out podcast.
Thank you.
And you're also with me on Skype right now. And I'm also so happy that you're with me because usually you're so busy spying for me about you can't both gather dirty information about the dirty music industry and find the time to travel to my studio. And that's okay. You're going to add your expertise to a music question in the second half of the show.
Uh-oh.
Because that's all we do here at the Femme Fatale. We take your questions, faithful listener, about the world of TV, movies, entertainment as a whole, gossip, and research them via interviews with people who would know. Like, for example, oh my God, here we go. I'm going to say his name. Wait for it, Lisa.
I'm waiting.
Simon Preble. Simon Preble is the... Okay, let's just say he's the greatest thing to happen to spoken, recorded language since Dr. Dre. If there's an audiobook that you have enjoyed and recommended to another person, chances are it was narrated by Preble. His work spans not only literary classics such as George Orwell's 1984 and A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, but also some of the most memorable recent audiobooks. And, of course, more classics, Journey to the Center of the Earth, The Chronicles of Narnia, and the complete, unabridged Baroque Cycle by Neal Stephenson. All eight books. All words of all eight books. Now, I became a fan of Preble when I listened to Susanna Clarke's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. And before long, true fact, Lisa, I was actually buying audiobooks just because they were narrated by Preble. Like, I don't think I would have taken a second look at Raven's Gate, which I highly recommend to you, Lisa, if Preble had not been listed as the narrator for that.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. That's dedication. Overall, speaking of dedication, he has done more than 450 audiobooks and is considered one of the most in-demand guys in his field. More than 25 earphone awards, winner of an Audie, once crowned Narrator of the Year by Publishers Weekly. Yes. I also believe he's known as an audible or an audio heartthrob because he's done a lot of romances.
Ooh.
And he's British. And he's
young and hot and shirtless.
He's in his 70s, I believe. But you know what? He's also hot. Like, he's hot. Like, and not British hot like Kate Middleton, who's like hot for a British person. He's like hot, hot. If you go to simonpreble.com and you look at him, you'd be like, yeah, kind of like Colin Firthy hot. I just went there. So anyway, so when a listener of mine wrote in asking about how you're typing right now, I hear you, simonpreble.com. Yes.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I didn't need you to spell it. I'm just waiting on the interwebs to
catch
up.
So when a listener, I'm so surprised.
Holy cow.
Right?
He's a very handsome man.
Isn't he? Mm-hmm. You're okay, welcome. You are about to get like a whole interview's worth of that voice. Because when a listener of mine wrote in asking about how audiobooks are recorded, I thought, I am not worthy of Preble. I'm going to email Preble, and he's going to blow me off in that unforgettable, like, British voice he's got. But he did not. He got back to me, and he agreed to answer this question. I'm starting to lose it. Here we go. Simon Preble, how are you?
Very well indeed. Very well.
Let's get to the question. Alice L. wrote in to me via Facebook saying, during the recording of audiobooks, when actors make distinct voices for each character, do they record the book in order, or do they record each voice and then edit? We'll start with that question, and then I've got some more for you.
Okay, I'll answer that by giving you an example. I used to go to various universities and give a lecture about audiobooks. This was some years ago, but it's still relevant. And that was a question that came up all the time. And I chose a small excerpt which had six characters, all arguing. And I read that with each character, you know, in a distinct regional voice, woman, man, child even, all arguing with each other and rising to a climax. And it got a round of applause, and I leant forward and says, does that answer your question? In other words, all readers record as they go. They record the voices that you simply go from the main body of the narrative straight into the voice. And it looks like a party trick, but in fact, it's really the only way you can do it.
And I guess that's because the book, otherwise it would just take too much labor to divide the book up for you ahead of time.
Yes, and also, you know, there's a habit nowadays of cutting out all breath, which I think is like filleting fish to the point that there's nothing left. And if you did that with voices, you would get these strange differences of breath and timbre and intonation. Intonation is very important because it very often people don't hear every word. They hear one word in five. This is particularly true of watching a play on stage. And you, believe it or not, that's been proven. And so you hear the rhythm. And if the rhythm is disjointed by editing or whatever, then it becomes very noticeable, particularly like when you drop in, you make a mistake and you drop in something later. I drop in, I do what's called punching, which means I, when I make a mistake, I roll back and drop in and start again exactly where I made the mistake.
So does that mean that there are outtakes living out there somewhere on the internet of you being less than absolutely godlike in my mind?
Do you ever ask when you look at a film how much they didn't use? Yes, and I used to work for a company that used to have a blooper tape. I remember once an engineer and myself were very tired, and you hear me trailing off and then very gently snoring. And at the same time, he's done the same thing. And so they cut it down, but for 10 minutes, the two of us are...
Oh, my God.
That's one of the biggest outtakes that I've ever had. But there's a lot of swearing. Let me assure you, there's a lot of fucking and blinding, I can tell you.
I would pay good money. I would pay very good money to hear that.
And I certainly wouldn't let anybody hear it outside of my profession. The mystery, you know, the magic must be kept.
Fine. Now, do you rehearse or do you go in cold? Do you read the novel ahead of time before recording?
Well, you'd be very stupid if you didn't, because there you are on page 300, and it says the man spoke, you know, the hero, in a full Glasgow accent, and you go, oh dear. No, you prep. It's what we call prepping, which means that you go through the book, you get a shape of it, an idea of how it should be approached, whether it's a psychological, internal kind of thing, or a light-hearted, frothy, humorous book, or whatever. Sometimes this is not evident just by looking at or reading the blurb on the cover. You then pick out your characters and give them some kind of voice, not too broad, because do a broad accent and you're stuck with it for the whole book. So sometimes you can start and then let that drift away. You mark out all the words which you don't know. Some studios have a words service. Recorded Books and one of the major companies has their own word research department, which is great. Otherwise, you use an enormous number of websites on the internet. Indigo, Forvo, all sorts of other websites that tell you how things are pronounced. And that can be time-consuming. So we do a lot of work beyond just reading. But then you definitely have to prepare. That's the preparation. Then you start, and some people underline in different colors everything. Everybody has a different way of working. I have virtually minimal notations on my script. I keep it all in my head. And my characterizations, I tend to need a visual picture. So very often I use old British and American movie actors from the 50s and so forth. And I have in my mind, you know, there's a wonderful old woman who's a bit like the Marchioness from Downton Abbey, called Marchita Hunt. And she had a voice like that, you know, a bit of bread and rather, you know, shaky. And I use her a lot in my head for older ladies of a certain class.
That's fascinating.
So there's a lot of prep.
So for a brick like Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, what kind of prep are we talking about?
Enormous. I had to find the voices for the two characters, and then sometimes just voices came like the whisper of a guy with the hair. I thought of Edward Scissorhands, but and he has this, you know, and Michael for that book in my mind the director who works a lot with Johnny Depp.
Tim Burton?
Yes, Burton.
Sure.
And I think a lot of his kind of characterizations were used in my head and then out of my mouth for that particular book. The Thistledown Man. We have a very light voice, you know, very, very quickly and you know, that sort of thing. You know, this is very much like walking downstairs. Start looking at the steps and you're going to fall down. I have no idea how this is done. I just do it.
You've done so many different kinds of work, and now you're sort of known as the king of the audiobook.
Well, I was unofficially named the audio heartthrob. I did a lot of I did a lot of romances. Yeah. I've been nominated directly as opposed to just being part of an audio group. I've been nominated 17 times for audios, but I've only won once for a rather bad romance. So, I'm good at doing female orgasm, and I've got an audio to prove it.
Now, it's interesting.
But I stopped doing those because they were so boring.
You know, that's the same old thing. That's interesting that you say that. Have you ever been handed a project and said, "Oh God, I'm not gonna do that."
Yes. Sometimes it's harder to read a badly read book than it is a well-written book. A well-written book just flows from you. It's wonderful. It's a great joy. Badly written, you've got to pull all the stops out to help the author, so to speak, and ultimately help the listener. And this is probably why I tend not to think of it as narrating, but really as performing. There's a lot of narrators who have that same attitude, that we see ourselves as performers, as voice actors. But as opposed to certain books, I don't want to do, you know, technical books, memoirs and so forth, and just it when you see it. I'm not interested in doing that. And very fortunately, after having done this for 20-odd years, I'm in a position to turn work down that I don't want to do. I think it's a lot harder for someone starting out. It's good to do everything, and you then build up your experience accordingly.
Or you could just say, "I have a price for that." I mean, like somebody comes to you and says,
"I want you to work." Just name a reasonable amount of money, and you won't be working.
Oh, really?
Don't get me on that, because We are so badly paid, it's not true. It looks a lot of money, but for every recorded hour, which is the way we're paid, it takes a good reader with a ratio of 2 to 1, which is myself and the majority of experienced narrators. In other words, you spend 2 hours recording 1 hour. But then on top of that, there's another hour maybe of prep. And when you start to divide the fee up, it's not so great because most people are earning around 200 a finished hour. I get a little bit more than that, but even I don't get that much. The wonderful old days of 10 years ago when, you know, Harper's would ring up and say, oh, Simon, can you do this book? We've only got a budget of 10,000. Never going to see that again. That's what's really disappeared.
200 and per finished hour?
Yeah. And a book is usually, I don't know, about between 8 and 12 hours.
Good Lord.
So when you add it all up, I know, people think we earn lots of money. We don't. But you can make a living once you're... I mean, last year, I took a sabbatical and went off to Paris for 6 months with my wife. We have an apartment there. But the year, the 12-month period before that, I recorded 39 books. That's a lot of books. And I'm working both in the studio and working... at home, have a home studio. Without that, I would do considerably less work because people now want you to be not just, you know, a narrator. They want you to be an engineer. They want you to master. They want you to add music. They want you to do all the prep work, you know?
My God.
Which is, And they trust you to produce yourself. In other words, you make all the creative choices, which in many ways is great. Fun. I mean, it's marvelous. You're your own director. And but, you know, there's a reason why you have a director who has a different view and can, you know, suggest you're going the wrong way or with a character, which I have occasionally. I'm not perfect. But we're expected to do all that for some princely sum. You know, the orders, this last orders, this is off the record, but whatever. The last orders.
You know, I'm recording this.
That's all right. That's
okay.
All right.
Okay.
I trust you.
Okay.
In fact, I don't care if you do use this.
Okay, good.
When the books, you know, say there'd be five titles up for best mystery, they read out the names of the books and the authors, but not the narrators.
What?
Yes, it was so insulting. It was like, oh, we haven't got time for that. And, you know, every narrator sitting in the audience, what are we here for? We paid, you know, $350 for a ticket to not even hear our name.
And you pay for a ticket?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, you don't get anything free with the APA.
Good Lord.
The Association of Publishers. Remember that. It's Association of Publishers. And the publishers, I mean, eventually there'll be a prize for best sweeper of the studio. But there won't be many for the best narrator. So
all that's...
It's amazing because a friend of mine, George Guidel, one of the great... readers. Nobody will ever read as many books as he has. And Simon Vance is creeping up on him, but George Goodell has done well over 1,000 books now. I've done just under 500. He won Best Male Narration, and it has his name on the award. He goes up when years ago you could go up onto the stage. You don't anymore.
Oh, my God.
And, I know. And the producer, he went to take the award, and the producer says, oh, you don't want that, do you? And George says, it has my name on it. Yes, I do.
Well, what do they expect him to do, touch it and then walk away?
Oh, no. Exactly. The producer, you know, is going to keep that for his own self.
You are kidding me.
Also, I've had a producer, some young girl, 20 or something, and I was making a problem. I have some difficulties with certain words and things when they're put together, S, H, and S sounds. It's complicated, but basically, it's difficult to get over. And her response was, you know, it's only reading.
What?
Like, really?
Because, you know,
reading?
What I do is only typing, Simon.
Exactly.
It's only typing? It's only typing.
And that's coming from someone, not a stranger, not a member of the public, but a producer, someone who is supposed to be there for you, you know. Anyway, let's move on.
All right, so having heard all this, somebody comes to you and says, I want you to do 50 Shades of Grey. Is there any price?
Oh, please, no.
Come on, no. I'm willing to give you $400 an hour, $500 an hour. What would it take?
I'm a terrible whore. I'd probably take the 400 because it's at least $50 more than I would normally make. So, I've done so many different kinds of books that I don't really care anymore. But now I'm creeping on in age, and I'm rather thinking of kind of semi-retiring. I really want to just do what I want to do rather than, have to do everything that comes my way. But, they get terribly twitchy. They get throw themselves into hissy fits and say, oh, well, if you're not going to do that, we won't bother calling you. And that's the indication which happens in this business. It's the same old thing with all freelancers, It's the fear that you're never going to work again.
Well, how often do you work? I'm curious.
Well, I came back, 39 books, think of it. A book takes, on average, about a week and a half.
Okay.
So it's pretty much the whole year. I came back from Paris in May, and I'm on my fourth book, and I've got two more to do. So I work quite consistently.
Do you like the sound of your own voice?
I have a very strange voice. I wish I had my father's voice. He's dead now, but he had a beautiful burr to his voice. He was British, but he was brought up in Canada. And I certainly, when I go back to Britain, people presume I'm American because of my accent. So I say American and not American. and here, of course, they think I'm, cut glass British. It's odd. I have a voice which is a baritone. I can do very deep voices with no problem at all, throwing my voice down. Or I can do very light female voices. That sort of thing. It's very easy for me to do that, and I'm glad of that because your voice is the last thing to go. And, thank God. And so it's gone when you get something called old man's mouth, which is when your dentures don't fit properly or you start getting that slapping of the plenty of saliva and whatnot. It's called old man's mouth. How cruel. So I've forgotten what your question was now.
I have too, and that's okay.
Yes. You were asking me something. You were presuming that my voice is lovely. But yes, there is that thing about you're told, oh, you have such a beautiful voice. It sometimes pays off. For a long time, I was the voice when you rang a very well-known hairdresser in New York, and it was me saying, oh, so on in the midtown. And for that, I got free haircuts for like 5-10 years. And then suddenly, new manager, sweeps clean, hired someone else. And now I have to pay to have my hair cut. It's the only privilege I ever got. It's even difficult to get a free copy of the book you've recorded. The publishers are so mean.
God, this sounds like Dickensian in London. It just sounds awful. It's awful. But I do have to ask you a question. I have sent you a short list of tweets recently tweeted by the singer Katy Perry. And I would like to know if you'd like to do a dramatic reading of those tweets.
Which one of her tweets would you like a dramatic reading of?
I get one. I'll let you pick.
A dramatic reading.
Yes, and you may pick. And you may pick which one. Just say I would like the way you would do the introduction, the way you would say, "From Our Man in Havana" by.
Oh yes, from the bedroom of Katy Perry. Here is one of her many tweets. She has a question. If you make a wish on an eyelash extension, is it still valid? A question that is reverberating across the United States. Russell Brand has turned off his receiver.
My God, I just want to pelt you with Audies.
What else do you want to know?
The final...
You asked some very good questions.
Thank you.
And I've given you absolutely fabulous over answers.
No, you actually have. And you get paid, you know, you said about 200 per hour. I may get paid 200 per article. That's another story altogether.
I know. It's amazing how the, just as American society, there's the 1% and then there's the rest. I mean, stars get paid enormous sums of money, and that makes some kind of sense. But then below that, there's no tier. It just drops completely to very little money, which is, the winner of the Audi Best Male Voice was Colin Firth for The End of the Affair, Glenn Green. And he's a wonderful actor, and it was a wonderful reading, and he did a great deal in promoting it. That's great. No arguments with him. But Anne Hathaway, Samuel Jackson, they read, they didn't do a thing, and they got paid $100,000. Now, they're being paid $100,000 because that's Samuel Jackson and that's Anne Hathaway, and for them that's chunk change. And, devoting maybe 2 days to recording something, that's actually underpayment for them. But it annoyed a lot of narrators who do this as a real profession, not as a hobby, and they're paid considerably less. On average, the top guys and women, Katie Kelvin, Simon Vance, myself, and quite a few others, we're making around about $350 to $400 an hour.
Final question, then. I noticed, and I agree with you that you are known as the audio heartthrob. But it's
probably not anymore.
No. Oh yes, Simon. Oh yes. But what shocked me is I didn't even. You very kindly sent me your own website. I had done some wiki reading, thinking this guy's not going to put up any information about himself on his own website. And you have your phone number up there. You realize that people could just call you and be like, Simon, speak to me, say something to me. Why do you do that to yourself?
You want to work?
Yeah.
You want to be, I want people to call me.
I have nothing else to ask you. This has been a fantasy interview for me. Simon Preble, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're back. I may not sleep for like a week. I'm so charged. For those of you with tiny goldfish brains, you'll remember that last week I scored an interview with Marc Maron, but I have to admit I geeked out so hard when I landed Preble. I had to like re-civilize myself. I needed to like take a day to relearn how to eat with a fork. Really. It's okay. Let's go. Get it back, Leslie. Get it back. Now, because that interview was so epic and long, we're not going to do two more questions today or a cage match or anything. Just one more, I think. Lisa, you're really going to like this. You ready? It's time to shine, Lisa.
I'm ready to shine.
Go ahead and read the next reader question.
Billy Z wrote via Facebook, how far away are we from actually having obviously man-made pop stars in the U.S., like the Vocaloids in Japan? Or are we, as a culture, too focused on the rise and fall of actual human beings as pop stars to permit this to happen?
All right, now let me school the kids, just not to be clear. Billy is not talking about manufactured groups like Spice Girls or One Direction or any of that. He's speaking about celebrities who don't actually exist. Singers who were made up out of whole cloth and whose songs are created using software. And it's software that lets users synthesize singing by typing in lyrics and melody. Got it? Okay? Huge in Japan. There are several kinds of Vocaloids that can be bought. Synthesizers with different sounds, and they have names. They all have names. Like, you can buy Spanish Vocaloids named Bruno and Clara. And the very first one was an English Vocaloid named Lola. Here she is.
My name is Lola, an English Vocaloid by Zero G. I was one of the first voice banks released.
Lisa, I want you to weigh in on this. About Vocaloids. Have I missed anything about the Vocaloid phenomenon?
No, I mean, the only thing that I would add is that it is obviously almost always like animated. These are cartoons.
Yes, they are.
Or holographs, projections.
The visual element, if you were to go to a concert featuring Vocaloids, yes, it would be sort of a Gorillaz-like experience, only with actually like no human beings actually playing live necessarily, correct?
Yes.
Right. Now, and I want to talk about the Gorillaz, which was a group formed by the genius Damon Albarn of Blur. The group wasn't technically supposed to be Albarn and company, but rather characters, cartoon characters that they had created in collaboration with an artist, and their albums were conceptual albums about the adventures of those characters. But that's still not even close, because Albarn is still singing, musicians are still playing on that album, on Gorillaz albums. But that's the closest I can think of when it comes to a success in the United States of something even close.
I agree.
Okay. Stipe, did you know this? Stipe has actually praised the software, saying that a singer can theoretically use it to preserve his voice should it ever go pear-shaped. Can I get a hell yeah for a Preble Vocaloid, ladies?
And for those of you who are under the age of 150 who are listening, Stipe is actually Michael Stipe.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The lead singer of a band called R.E.M. that was really big once upon a time.
They were really big back in the day.
Yeah.
So for the record, there have been Vocaloid concerts in North America at Anime Expo, of course, in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So Lisa, you have worked at a record label. You have in a very deep capacity. I think you were kind of like the Mycroft Holmes of a record label, where like you technically had like this sort of like a job title, but in actuality, you were the record label.
That's so true.
It's really true. So what would you say to Billy Z's question specifically?
I think that he hits on it sort of when he says, are we as a culture too focused on blah, blah, blah? Mm-hmm. I feel like Asia and Japan in particular has a long and distinguished culture of being much more open to manufactured, animated, totally fake icons, content, or, you know, fiction, manga, anime, like all of these things, much bigger there. And culturally, it just fits in so much better than here. I feel like here, the only way you can get away with it is if you have something like Gorillaz, which pushes an envelope musically, pushes an envelope as far as kind of adult content, and is kind of out there. And like everyone knows it's a joke, and it's not like, you know, for instance, I know that some of these quote unquote pop stars in Japan are like, I don't even know a nice way to say this. People are gratifying themselves sexually to these.
What? And what? What?
Nobody is gratifying themselves sexually to the Gorillaz. I mean, they're like icons. Like, people have crushes on them and they want to be them. And it's just a totally different culture. So that's why I'm going to say it will not work here anytime soon.
Is that because when I know what it is for me, when I pay cash money to go to a concert, you know, and these days people are paying regularly. They pay three figures for a concert, you know, to go to a concert. They may pay as little as $40 to go see Beyonce, but they may be paying $200, $300 to go see Prince or more. And for me, but more likely, like for Beyonce, by the way, it's closer probably to $100. If I'm paying that kind of hard cash money, I want a live person in the room with me who's rehearsed, who's singing live. And I want to see costumes, and I want to see makeup, and I want to see, unless it's like Johnny Cash, in which case, or you know, Dolly Parton, in which case you can just stand there and just sing, and I'm happy with that. But you, or Preble. But you see what I'm saying? It needs to be, for that amount of money, I don't want something that unintimate. I want an intimate experience.
I would pay that money maybe once or twice to see like the Rolling Stones in their prime. Mm-hmm. if it was really realistic.
Really?
Yeah, that would be interesting. Like that sort of nostalgia feeling of like, what would it be like to see this particular person? Although, you know, after they had fake Tupac at Coachella.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was about to bring that up. Let me back up for a second. You were working at Coachella that year, were you not?
I was indeed.
And you saw the fake Tupac on stage, which for those of you who are not familiar with this, Tupac Shakur, he's all kinds of dead except for when he was on stage a couple years ago at Coachella via what people called a hologram, but it wasn't. It was more like a Pepper's Ghost type of a trick of the eye.
Yeah.
And essentially, I'm sorry, go ahead. I just wanted to brief people.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
So after this quote-unquote success of Fake Tupac, best believe there is already something in the works in Vegas to do a hologram act that's like Johnny Cash, Elvis, Patsy Cline, like a variety show of dead people that you can't see anymore. And while I think that is creepy and strange, I would probably go see it once.
Would you pay hard cash money for it? Would you pay $150, $200?
It depends on how realistic it was and what the experience was like.
To me, I hear what you're saying, but to me, that's going to a movie. Why not just go see Elvis's Blue Period movies? That's movie money.
Just novelty.
Novelty, yes. Novelty money, though.
Yeah.
$25 bucks.
Yeah, but I would go see it once or twice and be like, all right, that was really neat. And then I'd be done with it.
But then again, you're in the industry. They probably let you in for free because they're like, Lisa B. Jenkins.
Oh, totally. Yeah, they'd pick me up in a private jet and fly me out to Vegas to see it.
Don't tell the kids all your secrets. I think that's part of it. I think that people were really hardwired to see a live body in a room. I think that's part of what it is if you're going to spend that kind of cash.
I agree, but that does not seem to be the case in Asia and specifically Japan.
That's true. There have been concerts, like stadium concerts type things with Vocaloids.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Vocaloids, the second that my sound engineer sort of found out what a Vocaloid was, he was like, what? Vocaloids? You kid, they're Vocaloids? Oh my God. And you know now, it's going to be Vocaloids, all Vocaloids all the time. So I think we've pretty much covered the question.
I think we have too.
I think we have too. And we've done Preble and it's been epic. So that's about it. Now, if listeners care to ask a question about how the entertainment industry really works, Lisa, how can they reach me?
They can write to you at Leslie@thefamefatale.com or ask you a question in the comments section of your blog at www.thefamefatale.com. If they prefer Twitter, they can holler at you at @FameFatale says. Fame Fatale says, gotta make sure I pronounce that properly, kids.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Or now, you know, if you listen to audiobooks, you would probably have better diction, but I'm just saying, go ahead.
That's possible. Or find you on Facebook. And if you like sci-fi, anime, fantasy, the whole nerdy nine, if you want to discuss a little bit of San Diego Comic-Con,
woo!
You may check out my podcast, too. That is www.thenerdout.com.
Now, are you actually going down to Comic-Con? The seventh circle of hell for people over 40.
Indeed.
Really?
I am indeed, yeah.
So how much would you pay me for a list of parties going on at the event? Because that's what I may or may not have in my sweaty paws.
Is it parties that I can get into?
You're Lisa B. Jenkins. You're being flown down on a private jet. Why are you asking me these questions?
All right, good point. Yes, I would like it.
All right, well, it's the least I could do for you for showing up on my show. Thank you so much, Lisa Jenkins.
Thank you, Leslie.
This has been another fabulous edition of my podcast. Thank you so much for listening. See you soon.